We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. Hope your Thursday is off to a good start, or your Wednesday's winded down, which means you probably did have a really good Wednesday. Either way, we're glad you're with us. ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, Sirius XM Channel 80, and of course, smart speakers everywhere. Guys, there was a NASCAR race last night. Martin Truex Jr. won it, and that was the least significant thing that happened in NASCAR.
Yeah, it really was. And by the way, I forgot about, you know, listen, I watched, not a unbelievable NASCAR fan, but I certainly watched, and I forgot about Martinsville. Martinsville's a half-mile track.
Yeah.
From the racing side, I mean, you want to talk about start and stop traffic. I mean, it was watching that. It's like, wow, just get to the straightaway, and then they're all slowing down to turn. It was very interesting to watch off a normal, larger-sized NASCAR track, the oldest track here in Martinsville. But Truex gets the win, but you're right. Talk about secondary news in the whole situation.
Yeah, you were sort of the news dump of the day for NASCAR. Yeah. And, oh, by the way, someone won this race when we know the biggest story in the sport was now NASCAR following through on really a movement that Bubba Wallace started in the last couple of days here, saying out loud to everyone that would listen, the next step is for us to get rid of the Confederate flag at NASCAR events.
By the way, Bubba Wallace finished 11th.
Right, in that race. Yeah. So here, Bubba Wallace started this on CNN over the weekend. He joined us yesterday morning before the race, and he was saying, I was trying to relax. My girlfriend was trying to tell me to put down my phone so I could concentrate on the race. Here's what he told us yesterday morning about his hopes for NASCAR getting rid of Confederate flags at all tracks.
Oh, we don't have it up yet.
Okay.
We'll get it there. We'll get it there at some point. But he was on with us talking about the hopes of getting rid of the Confederate flag. Did you say we have it ready now?
We do.
Okay.
Go ahead, Cliff.
My typical answer was, I don't really see the Confederate flags. I you know, obviously I do see them. They're flying high and inside the infields. And you read some of the comments of people won't come to races of African-American descent. They won't come to races simply because the Confederate flag is flying. And you look at that, it's like, okay, we are a very selfish nation. I feel like I'll take credit. I'm very selfish. But it's not about us. It's about other people. It's about coming together and treating your neighbors like they're your brothers and sisters. We're all brothers and sisters in this world. So, if it makes them feel uncomfortable, let's just take it down. Let's just get rid of it. No disrespect, but it's time to make people feel welcome. That's what we're fighting for. We don't feel welcomed in this world. The African-American community does not feel welcome, and I think we can help that by removing Confederate flags. If it bothers them, then let's make that change.
So that was what happened yesterday morning, and then yesterday afternoon, NASCAR announced that would be the case, basically saying the presence of the Confederate flag at NASCAR events run contrary to our commitment to providing a welcoming and inclusive environment for all fans, our competitors, and our industry. Bringing people together around the love for racing and the community that creates is what makes our flag, our fans, and sport special. The display of the Confederate flag will be prohibited from all NASCAR events and property. And that happened fast.
That did happen fast. And again, Bubba Wallace leading the way there. And then the drivers putting that video together, led by Jimmy Johnson, no doubt, you know, showed the backing of it and helped stoke those flames of let's get not only do this change, but let's do this change fast. I think so many people, and especially we'll hear from them in the NASCAR world, are stunned it happened this quickly, because this was tried once before to the point of, hey, trade in your Confederate flag and we'll give you a NASCAR flag, right, or the flag of your favorite driver. It was kind of tried, you know, and failed. Obviously, it didn't happen. Now NASCAR very quickly has put its foot down and its statement out and said flags are gone.
Yeah, and I think that's just it. We get used to, with so many of these leagues, the idea traditionally of swift response to anything. is almost never going to happen just because they're these big, large governing bodies. They're weighing in and taking the temperature of so many different things and all of it. And in this situation, it became very binary. You were told this is what we believe is right and this is what we believe is wrong in this situation, starting with Bubba Wallace and working through the rest of the drivers. And I'd be curious how much Bubba knew when he was on with us that yesterday, right? Because we asked him, you know, did he feel like he had the support of NASCAR, these other drivers? And he said he felt like they were going to do the right thing. He felt like everyone's hearts were in the right place on this. And not long later, this official statement comes out from NASCAR's Twitter account, which, Lord forgive the poor, you know what, that had to run that Twitter account yesterday, because I'm sure going through those mentions was a blast.
By the way, our own Ryan McGee wrote an incredible column on
ESPN.com.
It's called "The Confederate Flag is Finally Gone at NASCAR Races," and I won't miss it for a second. I suggest you read it. It is highly worth your time, where he goes into his own personal details and accounts of his family at one point generations ago being slave owners, and the things that he has sort of had to deal with about reconciling with that. It's an incredibly personal and intimate column. I highly suggest you read it. He was also on with Spain and Company. We'll play some sound about that article from him a little bit later. But here was Ryan McGee, ESPN senior writer, basically saying if Bubba Wallace didn't take the stand that he did, he's pretty convinced none of this would have happened.
If he's not there, I don't know that anything that's happened over the last 2 weeks has happened. As simple as that. And, you know, we're kind of in the self-congratulatory phase of there's a lot of people that are going to take a lot of credit for a lot of the things that have happened, particularly over the last 4 days, whether it be Martinsville, Atlanta, the press releases that have gone out. But the reality is that if Bubba Wallace doesn't go on Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s podcast and call out the biggest stars in the sport, then we don't have that video, the very NFL player-ish video that the drivers did on Sunday morning. If Bubba Wallace doesn't go on a media spree on Monday saying take down the Confederate flag, I'm not saying that NASCAR wouldn't have done it, but I don't think they would have done it today.
I think I agree with that. I mean, how quickly everything happened, I think it really has stunned a lot of people. Now, remember, there are no fans yet. I think one of the rates this month will be a couple with fans. Well, the first one, I believe, will be 1,000, like, service men and women.
Yeah.
And then the next one will be 5,000 people along the home stretch there, more probably first come, first serve of when they got their ticket. So we won't see full stadiums for a while, but you'll start to see it more and more. And then because, of course, what came from this on the other side was just what happened when Colin Kaepernick kneeled in 2016 is the flood of fans that said, I'll never watch another NFL game. Well, yesterday came the flood of fans that said, I'll never go to or watch another race, which you know was going to happen.
Oh, by the way, all those fans that said they never watch an NFL game, the ratings were way up.
Oh, I know. This is the immediate reaction. There was also the reaction of a driver as well. His name is Ray Ciccarelli. Now, he's on the Truck Series, but he's in NASCAR on the Truck Series, and he said this will be his last year, in part. Part of his statement on Instagram was, I don't believe in kneeling during the anthem, nor taking people's right to fly whatever flag they love. I could care less about the Confederate flag, but there are people that do, and it doesn't make them racist. All you're doing is blanking one group to cater to another, and I'm not going to spend my money to participate in the political BS. So, again, that's his right. It's NASCAR made their move, and just like we said with the sports, you can make the rules, and you can abide by them, or you can say, you know what, like Ray said, I don't agree with this. I'm out.
So I guess
flag
my first
doesn't mean anything to me, but I'm willing.
But I'm willing to throw away my career for it. Really?
Yes. Yeah. I'm okay. Gonna, dude. And yeah, that's basically where he's going. Obviously, what he said. You know, and again, he's allowed to have his opinion about it and saying he doesn't care about the flag, but he doesn't like the fact that he's taking that right away from people who do like the flag.
But again, he's saying he doesn't care about it, but he doesn't care about it so much that he's willing to throw away what he's worked so hard in his dream. He said, it's been a lifelong dream of mine, but I'm not going to do it anymore. Because in part, because of a flag that I don't care anything about? Okay.
As Ryan McGee said, if you are going to mourn the loss of this particular flag to that extent, you probably don't love NASCAR the way that I love NASCAR.
Exactly.
Which is to say that you love the sport more that you, and I understand the right to do certain things. The root of this symbol is in hate, and it is tied to some of the worst blights on this country's history. And so I I wonder aloud how anyone can lose sleep over. But the amount of change that Bubba Wallace created is a reminder of what everyone's being told and experiencing right now. And I recognize the irony of this coming from a show that features three white guys, but one that I think tries to be pretty open-minded with the way it views and talks about things, and certainly tries like very hard to include a diverse array of guests and opinions in a lot of this, is the value of diverse opinions in these places. They're basically saying if NASCAR was still that predominantly and almost all a white space, no one would have felt enough about this or said enough about this to do anything, which is sort of troubling, but it's a reminder. That's why you need a diverse array of opinions. That's why you need people that come from all these different backgrounds in spaces, and that is sports, that is life, that is business, that is everything, because without that, the change that you would get and the change that is possible when you add those opinions in doesn't happen.
Yeah, and Ray says, I don't care what flag you fly. So let's go down that road. Would you be okay with a lot of other flags?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, really, you would?
Throwing out there, people have the right to fly whatever flag they want. Well, okay, you can say that, and your sport chooses to not let this flag be a part of it, and you say you're done. All right, see you later.
Yeah, you can do it at your house. Yeah. You just can't do it when you go to a NASCAR race.
You know, so goodbye to him.
So good luck to your China flags, Ray, and your Russian flags.
And then it will be really, it's going to be very interesting, because you know there will be fans.
Of course there will.
Trying to get those flags in, and then how are they going to, you know, they're going to have to police that somehow, some way.
Well, that's another part of this discussion that was very fascinating. How will they try and police it, and how will some fans try and work around it? We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with GEICO? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
If Bubba Wallace doesn't go on a media spree on Monday saying take down the Confederate flag, I'm not saying that NASCAR wouldn't have done it, but I don't think they would have done it today.
It means a lot to have other people's support, for sure.
Golic and Wingo here with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, again reacting to the major news yesterday that NASCAR did exactly what Bubba Wallace said he wanted them to do, get rid of all NASCAR flags, or excuse me, all Confederate flags at all NASCAR races going forward, saying they don't want to have anything out there that would make people feel uncomfortable and not feel included, and it was a massive sweeping change that happened incredibly fast.
Incredibly fast. Again, Bubba Wallace leading the charge. All the drivers that made the video, led by Jimmy Johnson, I mean, they came at it hard. There's no doubt about that. But a lot of times, as we know in professional sports, change can be slow. We can see more reaction than proaction, depending on proactivity on depending on the sport. I never expected it to be this swift, and I think most of them didn't either, because there was a lot of wow, real surprise by NASCAR people who would know much better than us that they made this decision this quickly. Again, they'll have a while before whatever enforcement needs to be made on this, because no fans yet allowed.
Yeah, and on the enforcement front, it's super interesting. Ryan McGee sent this out yesterday and said, I once rode in a helicopter with NASCAR licensing and its partners as they searched the Speedway grounds for illegal souvenir sales, and they shut them down like a machine. So if you really want to enforce this, they totally know how.
Yeah.
Because they're going to have to, right? I mean, you make a decision this quick, you put it out a statement that fast denouncing that flag, you have to, right? I mean, you can't kind of do this.
No. And look, there's going to be workarounds. There'll be people that'll show up with a tattoo or a shirt under a shirt or a belt buckle.
The old coffee mug, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. And that's fine. Because Ryan McGee, again, I highly suggest you read his article on ESPN.com about this. It is truly personal and very passionate. He was on with Spain and Company, yesterday, basically. And one of the things he said was, people will try and find a way to beat the system now.
Can you see some of them wearing belt buckles and T-shirts and tattoos and anything else that will allow them to slide outside the idea of the flag is banned, but not the flag's representation on something else?
Yeah, they will. And I might even be related to some of them. And whatever. You know, if that's your win, then I win. You know, I don't have to look at that. You know, I don't want to have to go to the racetrack and shield my eyes from anything. And no offense, Redneck, I ain't looking at your waist. So I just don't want to look at that flag.
Wow. And as Trey keeps saying, you want to read that article because it really is an incredible article. But I am really interested on where this thing goes because of how quickly they have done it. Because I do associate this with NFL fans when Colin Kaepernick knelt, who's saying they're done with football. And now, again, NFL ratings have been incredibly high. Yeah. So, and you saw it all over media, NASCAR fans saying, I'm done. I'll never watch another race. I'll never go to another race, watch it on TV. And there'll probably be some immediate, but then we'll see if that, you know, evens out and comes back the other way and they have more fans.
Yeah.
I honestly have no clue how that will go.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things you can probably sleep better at night with that decision, knowing you believe now, all right, we're on the, and I'm not saying NASCAR did this with the truest intentions or that their heart is super pure on this. Like, they got their hand forced at a time where there is more power given
right.
to people that have traditionally not had it. And kudos to Bubba Wallace for realizing that right now. Like on a just human level, like we talked to Bubba Wallace yesterday, like, he seems like a guy who gets it and embraces it. He was super honest about how taxing the idea has been, because this is a lot of attention that's been thrown the way of all black people basically being asked to answer for an entire group of people and have all these answers for situations. And now imagine doing that in a sport where you're basically the only black driver at that level.
Yeah.
It's got to be exhausting. And so to see Alvin Kamara tweeting with NASCAR and tweeting with Bubba Wallace yesterday, talking about how he feels more, you know, he wants to be a fan now and support this. LeBron James retweeting Bubba Wallace, all of the love that he was getting publicly on a personal level is awesome to see for a guy that, again, in so many ways had to feel so lonely. And Ryan talked about that, how for the lone, you know, few members of, you know, pit crews or any part of the, you know, race day experience that had been the very few minority members of those groups, it had to be an ugly, uncomfortable thing to kind of experience that.
Yeah. I just want to read a couple of snippets from this column, which is just, it's so personal for him. He goes, before we go any further, I want to address the heritage, not hate crowd. I'm talking about those who
this
sound
is Ryan
like
McGee.
This is Ryan
right?
McGee, yes. I'm talking about those who sound like me and look like me. I have deep-rooted Southern upbringing. You don't have a boot to stand in when it comes to teaching me what that flag means. You go tail the tape with me on our Confederate DNA, and you're going to go down harder than Pickett's charge. I'm a direct descendant of slave owners. My family still owns the home where my forefathers lived, while the human beings they owned work all around them. As I write this, I'm sitting on the North Carolina coast just south of Fort Fisher, the would-be protector of the port of Wilmington that was overrun by Union forces during the winter of 1865. So don't come at me with claims that I don't understand what the flag of the Confederate States of America stands for or what it stands for now. My forefathers lost that war. I'm glad they lost it. They were on the wrong side of history.
It is an incredible article, and his partner Marty Smith will join us in just about an hour to talk more about this. But it is a very powerful article for a very powerful move that was made. Again, this was kind of attempted a few years ago, and obviously it didn't work because there wasn't enough oomph behind it. And boy, that has really changed. This is the time now to create change, and we are seeing change happen.
Exactly. And where that goes from here, like
right.
we said, there's so much that remains to be seen because we've got complications around all sports from the coronavirus and the way that that's affected all these things. And so it'll probably be a while, and it goes back to the point we've made for almost every sport, which is it's good for NASCAR to come out and have this kind of support for Bubba now, for the
right.
rest of these drivers to do it. But when it gets hard
yep.
and when people are back in the stands, I know Bubba told us yesterday, he goes, right. I don't care if I get cheered or booed. I'm built for this. I'm ready to go for this. Is everybody else?
Yeah.
Are all those people that aren't used to dealing with that kind of hate the way that he might be on there going to be able to hold up when it comes to that and have that same support for the guy that's in their circle?
Well, NASCAR has to be because
they
put it behind it.
They
have to be.
They did.
They absolutely have to be. And again, we're down the road on that, and we'll see. And there's always going to be a lunatic fringe on every side
yep.
of everything. We'll see when they start playing or racing these cars in front of crowds en masse how the reaction goes. But coming up next, one sport could be losing some fans for the right reasons. But is there another sport who could be losing fans because of an entirely different matter?
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Napa know-how.
Father's Day knickknacks, that funny mug, ironic tie, or worse, IOU coupon books. It's time to get yourself something you want, Dad, like a Craftsman half-inch corded impact wrench for $99.99. It's the perfect gift to give to yourself. And while you're here, don't forget to shop all our great deals on Craftsman tools. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer ends 6/30/20.
All right, Golden Wingo here with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. That sound you heard in the Sports Center rejoin right there was Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred talking to our own Carl Ravitch during the 35-round shorter draft yesterday of Major League Baseball.
Amazing.
Just think about that
five
number.
Rounds. One round last night, four rounds, I believe, today, and then that's it instead of the 40 rounds.
40 to 5.
This guy, by the way, Torkelson, the first pick, he didn't get drafted at all out of high school. Remember, if you get drafted out of high school, if you don't go and you go to college, you have to play at least 3 years of college. Wasn't drafted at all out of high school, and now is a number one pick in the draft. Pretty impressive out of him.
Yeah, it sounds like an absolute tank at the plate.
Oh, so. What a hitter. And again, they're going to try. They believe he has the tools to move over to third base. He played first base. I'll say it, so congrats to him.
So again, you heard Manfred say we will play baseball this summer. Well, we all knew that, right? We know that at the commissioner has the power as the commissioner to just hammer down the 48 game season, and that's the way it'll go. That'll be fit. Or that'll be fit in court.
Or as he said with Ravi, I don't know where you got the 48 games from, but you know, she's allowed to implement a number.
Right. And all of that is time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. There were some other very interesting things that Commissioner Manfred said. And this one I thought was the most interesting. Basically, he says, hey, we want to play as much baseball as we can.
I'm a big believer in the process. I would prefer to negotiate a new agreement with the MLBPA that gets us more games and resolves the issues that have separated us amicably. But at the end of the day, we negotiated for the right in March to start the season on a number of games that we select in these particular circumstances. And if we have to, we'll exercise that right.
So again, bringing up the agreement in March, what others bring up and say how poorly written it was, but boy, he's grabbing that one line, right?
Yeah.
We can negotiate as many games as we want. We have that right from that agreement. Everything else in the agreement seems to be ambiguous.
Is that the one thing you guys wrote down the right way?
One thing in stone there, because everything else, everybody seems to be saying, well, we're not sure how that was written.
So if you want to play as many games as possible, play as many games as possible, right? If the players were up for 114, do it.
Well, no, they don't want to pay, obviously.
Yeah. There it is. Bingo, bango, bongo. You move on to the second round. So don't sit there, hey, we want to play as many games as possible. You want to play as many games as possible with certain financial parameters. Yeah. That's what this is.
You want to play as many games as possible for right around $1.2 billion.
That seems to be
the general monetary pool that we've landed on here. And so Rob Manfred, who we've now heard from really for the first time in a while on a lot of this stuff, clearly skewing the way of his bosses of, well, yeah, of course we love baseball. We want to play a bunch of baseball.
You guys want to play baseball.
And again, we go back to the March agreement where they're pulling that line out that I was given the right to play as many games as we want. But also, Rob Manfred, in talking to Ravi, said that March 26th agreement was based on full stadiums.
The March 26th agreement was premised on the belief, mutual belief, that we were going to be in a position where we would be playing baseball games in full stadiums. And I think that we find ourselves in a situation where we're going to be playing largely without fans, if not exclusively without fans. And that altered the economic landscape and really required another negotiation.
So again, when we had Jesse Rogers on, he said there were 12 sections about pay in that agreement, and none of them specifically said, at least what he said, if I'm paraphrasing, would renegotiate if stadiums weren't full. So everyone is assuming that, and we know what happens when you assume, and God forbid you assume in a contract, because then we get where we are right now, if that in fact is the case.
Yeah, the two A's are the things you don't want in a contract: assume and ambiguity. And Jesse Rogers said the way that that contract or that agreement was written in March, there was a lot of ambiguity on both sides. And you brought it up. If there's ambiguity on both sides, then that's the fault of the people who are in charge, and that would be the owners in Major League Baseball.
Well, and it tends to then side with the way that things have always been and the people that have the power, and that's been the MLBPA. And so if you're saying, well, we're just going to punt on this with a sort of, I mean, the contractual version of a handshake or a good faith agreement that later on we'll take a look at this, like, you have left yourself wiggle room for the side of this in the PA that has always had no salary cap in their sport, no revenue split in their sport, and the ability to say we get our full salary no matter what. You've left them the wiggle room to say, well, we're just going to do stuff the way we always done. Why would we do it any other way in all this? You never gave us any indication. And that's the surprising part, is these leagues generally tend, and especially on the ownership side, to come into negotiations with much more business savvy because of everything that they've brought from outside their sport, and certainly better and higher paid lawyers. And yet in this situation, it has netted them a hot mess of nothing.
Yeah, and Rob Manfred went on to also say he didn't want to speak for the Players Association, but he says the owners, they all know this is a different situation.
You know, I can't speak for the Players Association. I can tell you unequivocally that the owners understand this is different, that they're listening to what their fans saying, and that they are listening to what the players are saying, and they're continuing to make proposals as a result of the input that they're receiving from those sources.
The best part of this interview to me, and Ravi did a great job.
Always
Ravi
does.
Had him on for a while. Ravi
always
did.
Does.
At one point, they're going back and forth on, you know, we all know what the deal is the players want 100% pro rata, and the owners don't want to give that, and it all depends on the games. So Ravi at one point was like, Commissioner, full pro rata, 100%, 70, 75 games, and we're done, right? Can we be done and just do that? Like, basically gave him, do this. And Rob smartly said, you know, I don't want to negotiate with you, Carl. You know, I'd prefer to negotiate with the players.
It might go better if he negotiates with Carl.
But it was great. Ravi just threw out the terms and said, and let's get it done. That was awesome.
I don't care if it has to be Ravi. I don't care if it has to be Passan, Buster, Timmy, any of these guys. Bring in one of them as a peer mediator.
Yeah.
Let them help you out with this, because apparently that's what you need at this point. Because unless you're Major League Baseball and you were the owners on this side, and you're going to, I mean, because I would assume if you had any sort of, and we heard rumblings of this early on, that there were email exchanges that indicated on the player side of things that they knew that this was with full stadiums and that was what the initial agreement. Unless you're about to start leaking emails to let us all know you got something like that even remotely resembles. You don't have a leg to stand on with that.
Yeah.
You have left yourself open to that spot. And so the sooner they concede that notion that, well, we negotiated the right, like, clearly you did a really bad bleeping job of that. And so once you get through that, now you can reconcile with the fact that, all right, we got to operate on the terms that exist today. And if they don't start doing that soon, you're going to keep putting yourself in a smaller and smaller window to get this done.
Two things. Much in the same way you're never going to show us that email, it's the same way when Tom Ricketts says, my losses will be biblical. Really? Let's see the books.
Well, we just show us and then we'll believe you.
That's a thing.
It's never going
to
happen.
Everything gets out publicly, to your point, Michael. Put that out. Show us where there's no ambiguity. Show us where it specifically says that. And you know we're not going to see that.
Well, and I say that almost tongue-in-cheek, because if they had something like that,
it would have been leaked.
Stuff like that finds a way to get leaked out. Yeah. Like, especially, like, these guys, it's not their first go-around with all this.
The other important thing Ravi asked was, okay, where are their deadlines? You want to have the season done by September 27th. You know, where are we with when this needs to get done and games we're going to play? And, of course, he didn't, and I get it, Rob Manfred didn't want to put a date on it, but one thing he said was, every day this goes on, is a day less we can play. Is a game less that we can get in. So.
Well, okay. See, this is where, and I, look, we've had Rob on the show a bunch of times and I look forward to talking to him again. But when I hear him say, we continue to make proposals, it's June 11th. Why are we still continuing to make proposals on June 11th. Again, this is stuff that should have been done and put to bed in March. Baseball had a golden opportunity to be, you know what? Wouldn't it be great if we would be the first sport back July 4th with everything the country's been through and continues to go through, the grand old game, America's pastime, on our birthday as a country, July 4th, with everything we're going through. We are here and ready to go. You had that put up for you on a tee. Someone put it up there for you to smack it right down the middle, 340 yards. And it's not even that you sliced it. You decided to let somebody else hit it for you instead.
You kind of hit it like Tom Brady in the match.
You know, far left, you know? I mean, that's
sorry,
the,
Tom.
No, but hey, that's the biggest issue here. It was there for you. You had the runway was clear. It was all set up for baseball to be the thing that it hasn't been in a long time. That shining beacon of sports hope that everybody could turn to. And instead, with everything else that's going on, with the unrest in this country and the dealing with the pandemic, they decided, you know what? Will be a better idea. Let's bigger publicly about money, because that'll get people back to our sport. It's just so frustrating.
It's an ill-conceived plan. And the tough part is, too, is you guys keep mentioning the runway here, because we know once they get this set up, then they've got to say, all right, well, this is how we're going to implement the start of what would be, you know, spring training now moved right into the summer for them going into this. And what are we seeing going on right now with the NBA? That's not like a perfectly clean process once you got to then, all right, now that we've sorted out the financials of the situation, we figured out where and when we're going to do this. Well, now we're dealing in the NBA with certain players voicing their opinion that might be uncomfortable coming back into the terms that they were now. Now you get, you know, certain situations where people are looking more into, all right, now that I know what our structure is going to be like, let me look more into the specifics of what this is going to entail. And baseball is different in so many ways, which means baseball is different in ways that are going to be complicated in different ways. You're going to be traveling a lot more for baseball over the course of this season. You've got to worry, you know, the NBA players can balance the fact that most of them have gotten paid most of their salaries already. Major League Baseball player, you got to balance the fact that, all right, how much do I value my health, safety, and my family and the things involved in that?
But that's not what we're hearing.
Being able to, well, but I'm saying that's the part that you still have to get to.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get to start to go through all of those things, clearly, that we're seeing other leagues work through until you do this stuff. And so there's still that to get to.
Still got work to do after figure out all
of this. But, but that's the worst part of it, right? I mean, that to me is the most frustrating part about this. Both sides have openly admitted, yeah, really, this is about the money.
Yeah.
This is about the money. Guys.
Well, we can say guys all we want. It's not going to change. It's where we are. So we can chastise them all we want. We're where we are. So now it's get something done. What number are we going to finally get to get this thing done? And when are we going to do it to save as many games as possible?
We've got a new contender in the numbers games.
Yes.
We've been focused on the numbers in the 70s, but what if I told you we're a bunch of big dumb idiots and Jeff Passan says 65 might be the sweet spot? Maybe.
In 89 games, the MLBPA came back wanting a fully prorated salary. The problem is both the fully prorated salary that the owners are not on board with and the number of games. There's a possibility that the owners will meet the demands of the players with their full salary, but there are not going to be 89 games this season, Matt. There seems to be a sweet spot somewhere between 65 and 75 games that might land a compromise, but absent of that, the owners can implement a 48-game season, and that is the last resort in the absence of an agreement.
You talk about frustrating. That's going to be the biggest frustration if they do end up with 65 games at full pro rata. I mean, that's like, my God, we were going to do this all along. It was just a matter of all the time you wasted just finding what that sweet spot is, because we know what it all is. It's just a matter of how much less can we lose in each situation. And it's a matter of finding that sliding scale. As I sit here every time we talk about baseball and do simple math, there's a lot of people who's a lot smarter than I am that could have, if they get to that number, that could have figured that out a hell of a long time ago.
Yeah. All of this is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So that's baseball on the monetary side. Of course, everybody is dealing with the civil unrest in this country and the screams from so many people of color to finally say, look at how our lives have been different than yours. And last week, we had Torrey Hunter on the show with us, five-time Major League All-Star, played most of his career with the Minnesota Twins, then out and played for the Angels as well. And he said, and he talked very openly and honestly about when he was on with us, about some of the things that he had to deal with specifically in one specific city.
I've been called the N-word in Boston 100 times, and I said something about it. You know, and, oh, he's just a militant. He's lying. This didn't happen. No, it happened all the time from little kids. And grown-ups right next to him didn't say anything. You know, you know what? Don't say anything. So I had a no-trade clause in everything I had not to go to Boston. Not because of all the people, not because of the teammates, not because of the front office, because if you're doing that and allowing it amongst the people, I don't want to be there. And that's why I had a no trade clause to Boston. In every contract I've ever had. So, and I always wanted to play for them. And it sucks.
I have to laugh that in a soundbite where we almost interrupted Torrey in the soundbite, and I think I heard my own voice in there about to do it, we interrupted that soundbite. Yeah. It's incredibly meta of
That's
us.
That's how we roll.
In an attempt.
There were some pauses.
In an attempt, while Torrey Hunter is bearing it all out.
Yeah,
like, that was as honest of an assessment as that situation as we have, you know, heard in a while from an athlete. Specifically, we know about that city that's got plenty of those accusations in its history.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of times, you hear something like that, and then what do you hear from the place that gets vilified? Oh, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Not by the Red Sox.
No, the Red Sox. It was an amazing, open, honest statement by Torrey and an amazing response by the Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox released a statement admitting to those racial slurs from fans toward players as well as their own staffers. Part of that statement read, "Torrey Hunter's experience is real. If you doubt him because you've never heard it yourself, take it from us. It happens." Last year, they went on to say, 7 reported incidents at Fenway where fans used racial slurs. Those are just the ones we know about. And it's not only players. It's happened to the dedicated black employees who work for us on game days. Their uniforms may be different, but their voices and experience are just as important. And Torrey quote tweeted that with the statement, "Change starts now. Much love." He was also on the Red Sox flagship station, WEEI in Boston, to discuss those comments he had with us last week and said he heard far more racist taunts in Boston than any other city. The Red Sox also say they would remain committed to using our platform to amplify the many voices who are calling out for injustice. So, I mean, you can't deny it anymore.
No, and listen,
you can't deny it.
It's not like we haven't heard stories before from Boston about things like this. And Torrey was obviously very open with us about it and got the Red Sox to be open about it. So, again, let's see what it leads to, right? Isn't that all what we're doing here, seeing what everything can lead to?
But it's also important to, like, affirm what people have been telling us, because that's the
yes.
Like, honestly, the disappointing part in all of this is, all right, the Red Sox decided to do this now. Like, Adam Jones said this stuff back in 2017, and people were asking for proof.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, you know what? Or you could just admit, hey, we got problems. It doesn't make the Red Sox organization, you know, all of a sudden, it doesn't make everything about their foundation and who they are and all this stuff necessarily bad, but it's an acknowledgement that, hey, this stuff happens. We need to do a better job of policing it. And a guy like Adam Jones, who came there, wasn't lying when he said that, like so many people may have accused him of or thought of. It's like, no, you were being told this is the reality. And now for the Red Sox to come out and say, yes, this is happening, we need to do a better job of it. God, at the very least, at the start of this, is an acknowledgement that, okay, yes, we are acknowledging the reality that so many have been facing when they have come to play us.
Yeah, that incident was from 2017. And Jones, when he saw the statement put out by the Boston Red Sox, retweeted it with the response of the Red Sox saying, huge.
Yep.
Just how significant. Look, it's taken us a ridiculously long time as a country to get here.
And I should note, the Red Sox did confirm that incident when it was brought up. Point that out.
Absolutely. It does feel like it's taken forever to get here, but we're here now. And I don't think there's any way of going back at this point. And we need to be open and honest about all of this.
You know, think of the things in our world, in the sports world, that have been acknowledged. And people will say, well, people were forced into it or forced into that. Either way, they've been acknowledged. The NFL saying they were wrong in being against the protests.
Right.
Right? The Red Sox coming out and saying, yes, this stuff happened when there were players talking about it, and they never came out with a statement like that before. NASCAR, what are they, 72, 74 years old, and have had this Confederate flag flying for, you know, so long in that sport, as long as the sport's been around, putting out a statement saying, yes, we acknowledge that this flag should not be flying in our stadiums where we hold our races. So you're getting reaction, you're getting things actually being done. And as I said, I'm sure not everybody's going to think there are all these incredibly high and mighty reasons why all of a sudden they're doing it, but they are getting done. So this is a time where things can get done. Things are changing for the good. So, man, do it when you can, right? Take advantage of what's going on right now. Push hard for change, and hopefully the change will come, like we're seeing it come in some of the sports.
And it, in a lot of the sports, it's going to be led by the athletes involved that are certainly going to hopefully hold their governing bodies accountable for all this. But also, I mean, those of us that cover it, the people that are fans of it, everyone kind of policing the situation now.
And I'm going to say this other thing about athletes, because we talk about athletes and what they can do, not only in the world of sports where we are, but outside of sports as well. I think one of the great things the current athletes and a lot of the sports are doing right now is getting very active in their communities, because what's one of the ways that people, when this all has started, said, you want to make change? Well, you know where you can make change? With the vote. So yep. These athletes have been very vocal in their communities about registering for the vote, get out and vote, especially with what went on in Georgia and how awful the voting was for people to try and do, to make sure that you can vote, that this is what a way to get change, and it's athletes helping lead the charge in their community.
To that end, LeBron James, Trae Young, Skylar Diggins, and Jalen Rose have all partnered with an organization called More Than a Vote that's going to pair up with other voting organizations to help specifically work to get African Americans to register to vote and cast their ballot. So this is a lot of people teaming up in very meaningful, yeah, impactful ways to keep this going forward, to keep this moving.
And it starts wherever you are, right, and the things you can do in your community. Speaking of community, coming up, the NBA is close to restarting at Disney World, but how many players are now saying, wait a minute, what do I have to do when I'm there?
I ain't going to be there.
The list might be growing about some questions. We'll get to all of that next as we continue with you on a Thursday morning. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio and ESPN2.